Calvin L. Rampton, whose three terms as governor of Utah overlapped the final 6 years of David O. McKay's presidency, captured much of the essence of McKay and his administration. Quote, "I was asked on an interview on television here several years ago, out of the clear blue sky, who would you say was the most valuable player in Utah life of this century? And I said this instinctively, President McKay. I still believe that's true. He was genuinely loved. That's not true of all presidents of the church." Unquote. The greatness of David O. McKay was not captured in facts and figures. Other church presidents have served longer, traveled farther, presided over greater growth, built more buildings, defined more doctrines, and instituted more sweeping changes in organizations and policy. Yet, to this day, countless people who knew him or who never met him but were part of the church over which he presided describe him in terms that emphasize his striking appearance and distinctive presence. But appearance alone did not account for his overall effect on the church. A parallel might be found in two American presidents of the past half century, John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan. By objective measures, neither was a stellar administrator. Indeed, the legislative skills of Kennedy pale by comparison to those of Lyndon B. Johnson, as do those of Reagan compared to those of Bill Clinton. But Kennedy and Reagan both ignited a spirit of optimism and self-confidence that changed the mood and changed the direction of the entire country. Both took office at a time when America had seen better days and was looking for change. Kennedy faced a heated-up Cold War and a daunting Soviet military and space machine that caused many to question whether American democracy would be able to stand up against Soviet communism. Reagan faced an economy shackled with high interest rates, high unemployment, a stagnant economy, and the administration by President Jimmy Carter that America's future no longer looked better than its past. Kennedy and Reagan both put themselves forward as symbols of change, and the symbols became the reality. David O. McKay inherited a church that was provincial and backward-looking. His immediate predecessors wore beards and came from polygamous families, two powerful symbols that were out of touch with modernism. Zion meant the Great Basin, and for over a century, the church policy of gathering had transplanted the best and brightest converts from abroad to the geographical Zion, leaving behind a struggling vestige that never moved beyond adolescence. Clean-shaven, immaculately dressed, and movie star handsome, McKay immediately caught the attention of member and non-member alike and held it. He democratized Mormonism, calling upon every member to be a missionary and thus participate in moving the church into a new era. He told converts to grow where they were planted and built chapels and temples to allow them to do it without feeling like second-class citizens. Perhaps most importantly, he adjusted the relationship between church and member. For a full century, since Brigham Young announced to the world that the rumored practice of plural marriage was more than rumor, church members had been asked to sacrifice themselves for the good of the institution. McKay reversed that, asserting that the church was made for the members, not the members for the church. He emphasized the paramount importance of free agency and individual expression, for he understood that improvement of the parts would inevitably improve the whole. "Let them conform" was replaced by "let them grow." He willingly discarded institutional uniformity for the higher goal of individual excellence. He pitched a wide tent and then told members of all stripes that he welcomed them to join him and build the church within it. Perhaps, as Walter Reuther said of McKay, quote, "I doubt that another generation will produce a man like that," unquote. But we should try.